Well, good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. The statement we were reading yesterday at the end of our program during the second hour, as we seek to appreciate what Yahweh, which is God's one and only name, is offering us, was a commentary on the conditions in Eden. Now, this commentary is interesting because our focus of our program for the time being, and probably for the next month, is going to be, maybe even longer than that, going to be the conditions that existed in the Garden of Eden. What we can learn from Yahweh's definition of how we were conceived specifically to appreciate and enjoy and to capitalize on the conditions that exist in the Garden of Eden, as well as what that portends for our future. And we thought that in the midst of this, after learning that humankind was given one thing that animals were not given, which is a nesama, a conscience, this ability to exercise good judgment, something that academia and and politics, also religion to a large extent, are trying to drum out of us so that we're no longer exercising good judgment. That God created the Garden of Eden as a protective enclosure. Walls were around it, stone walls, as it turns out, specifically to keep the death and dying and the nature of life and the pain that can associate life with life outside, so that God could enjoy a perfect relationship with Adam and later with Adam and Chawa. So I thought maybe something that would be interesting to do is to get Yahweh's commentary on the garden. Now, I've said that the Garden of Eden tells us exactly what Yahweh has in mind for his covenant. It tells us that this is the reason that he created the universe. It tells us that if we want to be saved, the first thing we need to do is to get to know Yahweh and develop a relationship with him, and our salvation will be a byproduct of that covenant relationship. And I've shared with you that immediately in our immediate future, 20 years from now, when Yahweh returns, the entire earth is going to be brought back to the Garden of Eden conditions. I've shared that Sukkah, which is the seventh of Yahweh's seven invitations for us to be called out and to meet with him, is an annual celebration of camping out with God that is identical to the conditions that existed in the Garden of Eden. And I've shared that going forward, if you want to know what heaven is going to be like, if you want to know if you want to spend your eternity in heaven with God, then you need to look to the relationship God had with Adam in the Garden of Eden to know whether or not that's what you want to do for the rest of your life, which is to learn from him, to go on voyages of discovery, to examine the universe and life with him for this grand adventure of discovery. Now, it's one thing for me to have read Yah's Torah teaching and to put together the pieces and said, well, this is obviously what he's saying. It's another thing entirely for him to tell us in his own words when he makes his own commentary on the conditions of the Garden of Eden. So this is Yahweh speaking in first person to us, telling us how we should view not only the Garden of Eden, but the covenant that is the next story. We go from the Garden of Eden to the flood story, which is also about the covenant, to the actual formation of the covenant with Abraham. One continuous theme in the opening book of the Torah. And so here's God in through the prophet Yeshayahu, Isaiah, telling us the same thing, that this ought to be our focus, because if we focus on this, we'll come to understand everything that's important in terms of our response to who God is and what he's offering. So this is what he said. Those seeking to know Yahweh should be observant so as to interpret and understand, looking to the godly rock and enclosure that you were cut out of. We were cut out of the Garden of Eden. Observe so as to properly interpret and understand, looking to the godly Abraham, your father, and to Sarah, who bore you. What he's saying here is that if you want to look at the eternal family of God, the covenant family, then the mother and father of the covenant are Abraham and Sarah. They're both representative of something that is vastly more important than the two individuals. Abraham is a metaphor, although he is a tangible and real individual, he also serves as a symbol for what his name represents. Abraham, merciful, loving, and enriching father. He is the metaphor for our heavenly father in our participation in the covenant. And Sarah, name means to engage and to endure. Her name is based on a vowel that is not a vowel, but a verb that is the basis of Yisrael. You know, the purpose of the covenant in Abraham is for us to become Yisrael. What does Yisrael mean? Three Hebrew words, Ish, which is individuals, Sarah, which is the verbal form of the name of Sarah here, who bore us, and El, which is the title of God. And it means individuals who engage and endure with God. That's the purpose of the covenant, to enable us to engage and endure with God. There's an aspect of Sarah, too, which I find very enlightening. It's often translated wrestle, because it means to strive with, to participate with in such a way that there's a lot of interplay between the parties, a lot of give and take, even striving and struggling to some degree. And we do that in relationships. And God's saying, that's cool. You know, I'm cool with you doing this. You know, it's like Abram having the discussion with Yahweh. You know, he said, I'm going to go destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And he was and talking about Sodom. Abraham had his nephew there, Lot. And he says, you know, you're too merciful to go destroy that place if, you know, there's 100 decent people down there. And he said, yeah, okay, I'll spare it for 100 decent people. Well, you spare it for, you know, well, how about 10? Okay, yeah, I'll spare it for 10. You know, and God is okay with us having that kind of give and take relationship. And so that's what those two names represent. And they are the mother and father of the covenant. What God is saying, if you want to understand your opportunity to engage in a relationship with me, look to, come to interpret appropriately Abraham and your father and Sarah, who bore you. For indeed, he says, I invited him to meet with me. And that was Kara. That's where we ended our program yesterday. Kara is among the most enlightening terms in the whole of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Kara means to invite, to summon, to meet, to welcome, to read, and to recite. And it is the basis of the term mikre, and the plural, mikra in the singular, which are the title that Yahweh gave to the seven invitations to meet with him. The covenant is the means to relationship. The mikra and mikre in the plural are the means to our salvation. And so he's talking about the covenant first for relationship, and then he uses kara because the mikra are the basis of our salvation. It's how we go from this world of death and dying and of pain and turmoil to Yahweh's perfect realm is kara, through the mikra. So I invited him to meet with me, kara, as one. So he's inviting, he just mentioned, Abraham and Sarah. So he's looking at them as one family, one covenant. I invited Abraham to meet with me as one, speaking of he and Sarah as a singular unit. This gets right back down to the essence of the covenant, which is based upon a monogamous marriage. And it also drives to the heart that mother and father, husband and wife, coming together to bear children, as they did with Yishak, which means laughter, is the essence of the covenant. And God is saying, I've only got one covenant. This is it. And that men and women, husbands and wives, as part of this family, are all one. And it's not just one as one family. It's one with me. Yahweh and his covenant are inseparable. He says, then I descended to bless him. This is the term that I would also put up there on the top 10 in terms of understanding who God is and his message. Religions want to give God the title of Lord. Lord is someone we have to obey. Lord is someone that controls. Yahweh's view is, no, I'm going to perform the role of father. And by the way, I didn't mention I mentioned what Abraham did as the merciful father, and I mentioned what Sarah's name means in Yisrael as existing and enduring with God, but she's also a metaphor for the set-apart spirit, our spiritual mother. So with God, his view is, no, I'm not a lord. You don't bow down to me as one would a lord. No, that's the opposite of what I intend. God is so much bigger than religious connotations of him. In religious connotations, man bows down to God. That diminishes God. What makes God big, which causes God to grow, is the same thing that was sharing in the beginning of this program. And that is family. Children. Children is what causes us to grow, to be much more than we would otherwise be. There is very few things in life as rewarding as your children asking for advice and being able to share that advice with your children. I mean, one of my great memories as a person was with my first son is getting down on the ground. He just wasn't a crawler. I mean, my first son went from you put him in a place and he'd stay there to the point he just said he'd walk. And I recall that I was, I had a mentally handicapped brother, and so we learned that through patterning that whole process of crawling on in the sensations and the coordination of crawling on hands and knees actually stimulated the brain and created a coordination. And so I was down there with my firstborn child, trying to teach him how to crawl, because he just wouldn't crawl. He'd put in place and he would sit. And I kept on trying to teach him how to crawl. What he was watching was me stand. So as soon as he would watch me go from crawling to stand up and then walking, he just said, oh, the heck, it's crawling. He just stood up and walked. But that whole idea of getting down on my knees so that to help lift my son up is one of my great memories. That's the way that Yahweh views us and his covenant. We'll be back in a moment. Returning to Yahweh's statement regarding not only the Garden of Eden, but what came out of it, which was the covenant with Abraham. He says, for indeed I invited him to meet with me, Kara, as one. But then I descended to bless him, and I caused him to be great. Now, a couple of just of fascinating insights here. Barak tells us that Yahweh get down on his knees to lift Abraham up. The combination of Barak Rava tells us that God's view of his relationship with us and our salvation is identical to the one that I had with my children. What most fathers have with their children, to get down on their knees to lift their children up. Barak says that he descended. He diminished part of himself out of love to get on his knees to lift us up. And that is what caused Abraham and Sarah and the covenant to be great. Rabbah means that, conveys the idea that Yahweh enabled his covenant children to be much more than they previously were, empowering and enriching them. Rabbah speaks of empowering someone, enriching their lives. It's the very nature of what parents want most for their children. And so this is God's perspective on not only the Garden of Eden, but the covenant which grew out of it. Now, when we study the Torah, especially in the light that is provided here by Yahweh through his prophets, it becomes clear that we will return to the very place we began. We were once perfect and immortal, and we camped out with Yahweh in paradise. And while that was nearly 6,000 years ago, or just shy of one score of years from now, at least at the time of this conversation here in 2013, upon Yahweh's return and the completion of his work, it's going to bring us right back home. The entire earth will be made like the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden, the enclosure of great joy. So here Yahweh is predicting that as we celebrate the millennial Shabbat, Yisrael and perhaps the entire earth will become a perfect garden. Indeed, Yahweh will comfort Zion. He will console, demonstrating compassion to all of her destroyed and depopulated places. Now, before we go on, you've heard the term Zionist, and Zionist is used in a derogatory fashion by Muslims to demean Jews. It's also used by anti-Semitic individuals to demean Jews. They call them Zionists. Well, it's from a term that Yahweh coined. It's Sion, T-S-Y-O-W-N. Sion means signpost along the way. It is a mountain in Jerusalem, one of the important mountains along with the Mount of Olives and Mount Moriah. Moriah means to revere Yah. The Mount of Olives is specific to the role of olive and olive oil symbolically as the source of light and of healing and of anointing. And so here is God says that I'm going to comfort by way of the signposts along the way. What is the most important signpost along the way? It's the Torah. And I'm going to console, demonstrating compassion to all of her destroyed and depopulated places. Those who have followed the signposts through the covenant and unto Yahweh are going to be those who are comforted. But he's going to return, Yahweh said, at a time when much is destroyed and much is depopulated. Going to be destroyed and depopulated principally by Muslims, at least in the first phase of the Magog War. And then in Armageddon, God intervenes to stop that war. He then says, and even her lifeless places, which were devoid of the word, will be as Eden. And also her desert wasteland will be as a garden enclosure of Yahweh. Overwhelming happiness and joy will be found in her. Songs of thanksgiving and the sound of singing and accompaniment of musical instruments, sorrow and mourning for the dead shall disappear. Yashayah, Yah Saves, 51:3. Hello, Larry. One of my favorite passages. Oh, it was so nice of me. I welcome you to the program just as the music begins to play. But we'll be back at the bottom of the hour for our long segment. So please, Larry, stay on with us and let's talk about Yahweh telling us that when he returns, he's going to transform the earth into the conditions of the Garden of Eden. We will no longer know sorrow, mourning, or death. Only overwhelming happiness. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So we just heard Yahweh himself tell us that he is going to return during a time that much of his land is destroyed and depopulated. He said that he is going to return those places back to the conditions that existed in Eden. He says that it's going to be a garden enclosure of Yahweh. Tells us that it's going to be overwhelming happiness that is going to exist there. Great songs will be sung, musical instruments, and that sorrow will be no more. Tells us what eternity is going to be like, don't you think, Larry?
Yeah, it'll be a wonderful thing, no doubt about that. Yep, absolutely.
I just love the idea, though, that you can read the Torah's presentation of the Garden of Eden, and then you read his presentation of the experience with Noah and the Ark, and then you go right directly into his whole relationship with the covenant and with Abraham and Sarah. And then as I look at later as Yahweh, both in immediately thereafter in Exodus sets up the seven Moed Mikre, beginning with Passover and unyeasted bread and firstborn child, leading to the revelation of his Torah on Shavua. And then you have in the next book, named Kara, named after this very verb, that you have got reemphasize this annual celebration of these events that leads to this the seventh step, the seventh Mikre, which is Sukkah, camping out with God. It just struck me as I read that, well, what we're doing is we're walking right back to where we began. I mean, God's taking us back to where we started, which is
right, and walking us right through it to
right,
the end.
Right, and it seems just so obvious to me. And then, you know, you stumble upon a passage in Yeshayahu, a prophetic passage, where Yahweh was saying, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing here. But it's for me, it's a lot more fun to go through and put the pieces together and come to the conclusion than it is just to be told the answer.
Well, that's true, but some of us are thick enough, we like to be told the answer and then go look at it and go, wow, why didn't I see that to begin with?
I guess my favorite of all is to be able to look at the presentation that God provides, to put the pieces together, to come up with what is the answer, and then to have him share, yeah, that's the answer, and here's the results, and yeah, you got all that right, then that reassurance is the best part of learning, you know. So you figured it out, and then you had the author of this wonderful opportunity said, "Yep, that's exactly what we're going to do." I think that's the best of all worlds. But there's lots of things that strike me here. One is that when he says that there will be songs of thanksgiving and the sound of singing and accompaniment of musical instruments, we're still dealing with the physical realm. That point. You know, heaven can't have the sounds of music or musical instruments because it is a spiritual realm, and in a spiritual realm, the vibrations off of the and the sound waves that emanate from the instruments and from our vocal cords wouldn't resonate. They wouldn't be effective. So we're talking about a physical realm here. So we know that we're dealing with the millennial Sukkah. We're dealing with this 1,000 years that's going to transpire immediately after his return, because he says, I'm going
to
return.
Day of rest. Yeah.
You betcha. He says, I'm going to return. So we know that return is the day of Yom Kippurim, when he says, I'm going to reconcile my relationship with Yehuda and with Yisrael based upon putting my Torah inside of them. So we know that's the day of reconciliation, and what transpires 5 days later? Sukkah.
Yeah, Sukkah. And so right there at the end of Zechariah's, right. They're walking in for Sukkah. Yep.
Right. And what's the? How would you define Sukkah if not the Garden of Eden, where you're camping out with God?
Yeah, it would have to be. Sure. It would have to be. Of course.
Yeah. And so he's even using it here. He says it's Eden. You know, great joy, which is the delightful and pleasurable in a garden enclosure, that which is conducive to life and to growth of Yahweh. And therefore, all of the stuff that existed in these last 6,000 years, all of the stuff that existed outside the garden when we were in the garden, which is sorrow and mourning and death, all that's going to disappear. We're only going to know overwhelming happiness. Sounds like a grand adventure.
Stuff, I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, so, well, of course it's an adventure. You know, you had said something about Zion, you know, and the way, mm-hmm. you know, the
right.
Muslims, like, you know, every Jew's a Zionist.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure what a Zionist is, to be honest with you. I mean, if you're saying, do the Jews have a right to a homeland, then I'm a Zionist.
Yeah.
Okay? But if it's some Talmudic, you know, we hate everybody else thing, then I'm not a Zionist. So I'm not sure what a Zionist is. I've had friends of mine.
There's a political definition of Zionist, which means zealous for living in Israel as a race living in Israel. That's the political definition. And the only definition that matters to me is Yahweh's definition. Zion means signpost along the way. Yahweh has but one way. And his signpost is always the same. It's his word. So if you're sharing his word about his way, then you are a Zionist by the only definition that matters, and that's what you do. You do that on a regular basis. So from Yahweh's perspective, we are both Zionists. From a political perspective, I don't think either of us is Jewish, and politically, Zionist is a term that is ascribed typically to Jewish nationalists. So we don't wear the political label very well, but we certainly wear the Torah's label of Zionist.
Yeah, well, there's a group out here called the Black Hebrew Roots Movement. Mm. And, of course, they're the real Jews, according to them. Mm. You know, all known history goes aside, and they're the real Jews. But I had one of them tell me they could think of 7 million Zionists that need to be killed. Now, that, of course, puts me to mind of the enemy at the end that is attacking Jerusalem.
It's amazing.
It's mind of the family. You know?
Right, is how those who don't know Yahweh like to use his terms. It's the same thing with every religious cult. They all base their credibility on something that Yahweh said or did in the Torah, and then they twist it so that they're the enemies. So here's people claiming to be the Roots Movement, being a Zionist Roots Movement, not recognizing what Zionist means or what they'd be rooted into, and they have as their enemy the very people that Yahweh is coming to reconcile his relationship with. You know, God has every reason to be mad at Israelites. He really does. But the fact that he would be justified in telling them, you know, go away and stay away. You've done everything you could possibly do to annoy me. It's not their character that matters in the end. It's his.
It's Yahweh's words that matter in the end.
Right. Yeah. He said that he told Abraham what he was going to do with the covenant, and he told Yishak, and he told Jacob what he was going to do, that it was an everlasting covenant. And so God's character won't allow, no matter how inappropriate the Israelites have been, God's character won't allow him to renege on his promises with Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob, and therefore with Israel, and therefore the day of reconciliations, he's going to reconcile his relationship with them. Now, they come to their senses. There's something about 7 years of war, which kills more than half the people on the planet, and having both of the last two world wars being focused on Israel, and their inability to defend themselves, that does have people come to their senses. I mean, there's nothing like impending death that finally gets your attention. So they're going to change. It's kind of like the Hezekiah situation. I mean, they had the Assyrians bearing down on them. They had destroyed the northern kingdom. They had 185,000 men under arms ready to besiege the last bastion of hope for what was Yisrael, now Yehuda. And, you know, with impending death and being knowing that you're going to be hauled away and being tortured, they said, yeah, maybe we ought to give God a chance. And God wasn't slighted. You know, he didn't say, you know, I wish I wasn't your last choice. But, you know, you finally came to me as your choice. So here I am. I made a promise to your forefathers. I'm going to honor it.
And they all died outside the city walls, too. And that's pretty well-documented historical fact, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. The Assyrians went back and wrote all about the failed siege. Every bit of history that is presented in the Torah has been affirmed. And, you know, it's interesting. They died by drinking poisoned water. To prepare for the siege, Hezekiah diverted the channel, which is the spring under Mount Moriah, so that it would come up in the city, not outside of the city. And when they diverted it, it took some of the water that went outside of the city, and it took it back by a toxic place in the rock. And so the water that came out of the city because of the diversion was poisonous. So that's what happens when you come to destroy what God has given. God views that as is inappropriate. And since he gave those Assyrians their mortal life, he was in a position to shortchange it without taking anything from them. You know, it is possible, if you're God, to take a life without actually diminishing anything, because it was God's gift to them anyway. And if they choose to deploy it in such a way that is counterproductive to his children, that's why he says, I'm jealous. I'm going to protect my children.
Well, I just bring that up because in the event there's anybody listening that might be considering that movement, it's pretty hard to hate the family and be adopted into the family all at the same time. It just really can't be done.
Yeah, and I think that when we are very exacting when we choose to convey Yahweh's words and to communicate what his words mean. And so when we speak of Zion, we're going to use Yahweh's definition. And this helps to reinforce why it's important to use his definition. Yahweh says that he will comfort Zion. So if you're opposed to Zion, then you're opposed to Yahweh. You're opposed to his purposes. And if you look up Zion in any Hebrew lexicon, you'll read that Zion is the signpost along the way. The signpost is Yahweh's word. The way is the way of the Mikra. That's why he began this by speaking of inviting Abraham to meet with him. Kara, the basis of Mikra. We'll return with our last segment. Welcome back to Shattering This. I'm going to pull all this together, and we have Larry with us here. God made it really obvious that if you want to have a relationship with him, then the conditions for that relationship are going to be very much like those that existed in the Garden of Eden. And we're not told a lot about what God and Abraham did in the Garden of Eden. So it means that the few things we were told are really important. And some of the things we're told are that Yahweh walked in the garden with Adam. So that would be that, you know, we're going to go on adventures together. We're going to explore together. We're going to go on hikes and just do things together. The other is we were told that Yahweh thought it would be fun to take all of the animal life that he had created and to pray to the animals that he had created by Adam one by one and to discuss them. Because life is the most interesting part of our universe. You know, can you imagine how much, you know, you create a platypus. All right, that's a fun thing. But if you create a platypus and don't have anybody to show it to, what fun is it? So, I mean, I just can't imagine how tickled God would be and say, yeah, here's the aardvark. Pretty cool, huh?
The elephant. You know? I mean,
yeah,
all of it.
Yeah. All of it. You know, I mean, can you imagine how exciting it would be to have the designer of life sitting there right beside you and saying, okay, for my next exhibit, let me show you the elephant. Let me show you the mommy and daddy elephant and the baby elephant and what I thought would be fun with their trunks. And, you know, look at this gentle giant.
Yeah, the way they hear from miles away, miles
right.
And miles.
Well, they feel the vibrations that come up from the earth through their body with their huge, big round feet.
Yeah,
and then, you know, here's the monkey. Cute, huh? Look at their tail and the way that, you know, they can climb trees and jump and, you know, I think that what God is telling us there, because he doesn't talk about a lot that happened in the garden. And he does say, you know, he says, I specifically gave them some advice. You know, here's some things you can do. Here's some things you ought not do. And we're going to have advice in heaven, too, of things that we can do and things that we ought not do. Because, you know, we're talking about some really powerful entities. You know, you know, I don't know when we're spiritual whether or not we can examine a black hole. You know, and if black holes are such that you can get yourself in a pickle by getting too close to one, then I want some guidance as to what would be appropriate and what wouldn't be appropriate. I mean, I want to see how new worlds are created, but I don't want to be there at a supernova if, as a spiritual being, we're harmed in some way. So
right.
Pay attention.
That's really what the Torah is, isn't it? It's
right.
being taking advice from Yahweh. That's what the Torah is.
Right. You know? And I think in eternity we're going to have the lowercase T Torah, which is just Yahweh's guidance, advice, and direction into how we're going to experience the universe with him. You know, how we're going to go on guided tours and say, all right, that's a nebula. Let me explain to you what I'm trying to do with this nebula. Here's a solar system, and here's how the planets work together to make one of these planets opportune for life. And here's how I conceive life, and here's how DNA works, and here's, you know, this is a multidimensional language. I mean, wouldn't that be exciting? And then to know that at any one time, on any one of these planets that we're exploring with Yahweh, that we all can take on material form, that we can take on physical bodies, so we can enjoy the things that we enjoy most in this life. Laughter and singing songs, you know, great soaring music, good meals. And we'll be able to kind of be stuck, if you will, in the ordinary flow of time, stopping time if we wish, in a beautiful setting, camping out with our best friends and family, with God, as we explore the wonder of life in the universe. And that's specifically what God is offering us. And I see this whole thing as just this marvelous presentation of life and love and covenant of choice and Yahweh providing us everything we need so that we can capitalize upon it. Well, thank you, Larry, for calling in today. I want to thank GCN for this opportunity to share Yahweh's testimony with you. Thank you for your contribution today, Scott. Look forward to being with you tomorrow. We'll explore the news as our program begins and then transition back into Yahweh's teaching, specifically about the conditions that existed in the Garden of Eden, because in that way we come to know our God, we come to know what he is offering us and how to be part of his family.